Hi, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. On the Prepare Podcast, we meet with women of faith and in ministry to hear from their experiences and wisdom to help prepare us in our faith pursuits and callings. Thanks for listening. I am your host, Sarah Makula. Today, a Rise and Shine Women's Conference main speaker, Amy Williams, joins us to share about her passion, her calling, and her story. Amy is hilarious, engaging, relatable, and you will connect with her story because she speaks to the universal and eternal truth that God has a calling for each of us, unique to us and our relationship with Him. Amy's first reply to the question, "If you knew me, you would know," might be the funniest and most unexpected response we've heard yet. Enjoy this episode. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the Prepare Podcast.
I am so excited to be here. How are you today?
I am relieved, to be honest, because this episode has been a long time coming.
It really has been. It has had its challenges, but here we are.
Yes.
And I'm excited.
Yes, so excited. And you are going to be one of our main speakers, you and Joe Saxton, at the Arise and Shine Women's Conference in October. And just a little update, we have over 1,200 women registered.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
We are going to shut it down. Oh, we're going to have so much fun.
Yes. And your workshop on Saturday, I think it has like 600 people signed up.
You can't see me right now, but my mouth just like dropped.
Don't quote me on that, but it's a very high number. I mean, it's going to take place in the ballroom, so it has no max out number. So whoever wants to come can come.
And I think the beauty of that is that I don't think it's necessarily that they're coming to see me, but I'm excited that they're coming to hear the topic, right?
Yeah.
And so it's also kind of great and sad at the same time, right? Because
Yes. As
women, we just balance is just self-care is just something we don't do. And so I'm glad that people are coming to hear more about it. But that also means that we're not doing a very good job of it and we need help. So
we need a little help.
Right, exactly.
We need
a lot of help.
We need some best practices. We need some tools. And that weekend is, I feel annoying how often I say I'm so excited. I'm just so excited to see so many, you know, this is a Salvation Army event, but it's not exclusive
right to
the Salvation Army. It's an open event, but so many of our Salvation Army women from as far east as Michigan to all the way out to South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, they're coming, and down in Kansas, they're coming, and it's just going to be so fun to see all these women together. It's just, I'm thrilled.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great party in the Lord.
Yes.
And hopefully, like, the building, the hotel will just shut down and the anointing will just overflow into the city. And
Oh,
my God, it's going to be great. We're going to have a blast. And I'm so honored. And I just want to thank you guys for inviting me to be a part of this and to share my story and my experiences. I'm always humbled by that because I'm a hot mess, right? Like, I am such a hot mess and I need Jesus. But what I love is what God can do with a hot mess like us,
right?
To share his good news. And so very humbled. And like you, I'm so excited.
Yeah, and we could probably gush and gush and gush about it, but let's get to the conversation part of the podcast.
Let's do it.
And first, before we get to, and we're going to kind of revisit a format of the podcast that we've done before, but, you know, we haven't done it in, I don't know, 6 months, been a while, where I ask you to fill in the sentence, "If we knew you, we would know." So, but before we do that, can you tell our listeners about Amy?
Sure. So my name is Amy Williams, and what I'm known for is I'm the hope dealer to the dope dealer. They sling dope, I sling hope, and his name is Jesus. And what that really means is that I have been in youth ministry for 24 years, and I am a gang intervention specialist and work with kids that are in and out of the prison system. And not just young people, but adults, so kind of about up to the age of 25. and just have the incredible privilege of walking life with young people who are on the margins of the margins and just find themselves in some really dark places. I deal with a lot of trauma, a lot of violence, and there's so much joy in it, though. There's so much beauty doing this kind of work and walking alongside young people as they just kind of try to figure this thing out. And so I do cross-gender mentoring. So I mostly work with young boys in the system. And mostly that's just because that's in my DNA. I grew up around boys. My brother was my best friend. I was a B-boy. I just know how to connect well with young men. But I do some mentoring with some girls. And it's usually like the sisters or the girlfriends, you know, of the young men that God brings to me. That's kind of my most favorite part of my ministry. But God has also blessed me to be a national speaker and trainer. And most of the things that I speak on center around youth ministry and youth ministry practices. But I'm also very involved in the criminal justice reform movement that is happening. And so I teach and I train a lot of churches around the school to prison pipeline, mass incarceration, and our responsibility to the inmate and the returning citizen. I mean, right, like Jesus was a prisoner himself. Mm-hmm. Paul wrote most of his letters from prison. And in the book of Acts, the word prisoner is used more in the book of Acts, but we never talk about that. We just talk about the Acts church, but we never talk about the prisoner and the importance of the prisoner to the kingdom and what I call the returning citizen, which is once they, you know, return to us. And so have a lot of passion. I'm on the National Institute for Juvenile Justice Ministries and on the Mass Incarceration Task Force for the Christian Community Development Association. So kind of have my hands in a little bit of everything.
You stay busy. As it pertains
to that. I say, yeah, just a little busy, just a little. And it's about to get busier, but I want to do as much as I can for the short time that God has me on this earth. So,
amen. How did you get into this ministry? How did this happen?
I mean, I think it's like with most people, I didn't sign up for it. I didn't ask for it. And I definitely didn't plan for it, right? Like my undergrad and my master's degrees are anywhere near ministry or young people. Youth ministry was the one ministry I said I would never in my life do, right? Mm. And then God is like, really? You sure about that?
He's like, challenge accepted.
I know, right? Exactly. He's like, it is on. And he got me, but I think it was just one of those things that in one of my past relationships, in my former marriage, we worked for Young Life. And my husband was the one that actually started and was on staff. But if you know, usually if your husband is on staff, then that means you are too. You just don't get paid, but you're still doing the work, right? And so kind of just found my way through supporting him in his ministry. And we'll talk a little bit more about how that transitioned over.
Okay.
But I've just always had a heart for the underdog and the ones that society say have no value and no worth. I've just always been that way. Even before I came to know Christ, I was just kind of that cheerleader for that group. And then when I moved to Chicago, I mean, just the young people that God kept having me come across were involved in gangs. My brother himself was a gang member out in LA and was incarcerated. And so it was just easy for me to relate and to connect with the young people that are in the system and in that space. And in Chicago, every kid knows a kid that's in a gang or incarcerated. Mm-hmm. And so even if you're doing regular youth ministry, you're still deeply connected with gang culture and the criminal justice system just because it's like 3 degrees of separation, right?
Proximity.
And so, right, exactly. And so it just matched my DNA to young people and young people in gangs in prison. It just kind of just all came together. And there's a story behind that. And I look forward to sharing that story with you guys in October.
Oh, can't wait.
Oh yeah. See how I did that?
Yeah, you're good. She's good, you guys. She's good.
I've done this before.
All right. Well, let's let our listeners know more about you by going through our fun 3 questions. And we'll start with and for those that might be hearing this for the first time, I'll ask Amy, if we knew you, we would know. And she'll answer that 3 times. And the first time, she'll start with something a little surface, a little fun, a little little whatever. And then the second will go a level deeper. And then the third one, it'll go even a level deeper so that there's some vulnerability and some sharing, and you're going to feel real safe with Amy come October. Yes. So, all right.
Amy, well, I don't know if they're going to feel safe, but you know, you're asking a lot because I'm crazy. Okay. Like, they may walk out of there like, what just happened?
What did we just experience?
Right. Why did you hire her? No, I'm kidding. I'm just serious. But
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. All right. So, Amy, if we knew you, we would know
that I almost won $25,000 on Wheel of Fortune.
What?
Yes, girl. Well, I actually did win close to $25,000, and it was the time of my life. And I know every time I say that, people are like, what? Pat Sajak, who's from Chicago, by the way. So, you know, we kind of had that thing going, and, you know, he was flirting with me a little bit. I was like, oh, Pat, you little devil, you. But I'm telling you, it was a blast. It was a blast. And I'm just one of those people that I have my bucket list. And one of my bucket lists was to be on a game show. And why not? Who are the people that are on game shows? Mm-hmm. Us.
Yep. Right? Just regular people, right?
Just regular people. And so life is too short to not experience as many things as you can possibly do. And so I knew I was going to be in L.A., so why not write in and say, can I audition for the show? And that particular week, they were like, well, we're only auditioning local people, but since you're going to be in town, we'll make an exception for you. And then boom, boom, boom. And I was on the 25th season of The Wheel of Fortune, and I was on the second week that it aired, and I won $23,000.
What? Okay, so
I know. I came in second place. If that hadn't guessed it and won that trip to Brazil, I would have won the whole thing. Because you know how, like, they add the value of the prize? Yeah. If she didn't win Brazil, I would have won the entire game. I landed on the $5,000 wheel.
Oh, my gosh. This is...
It was great. It was so great.
I wasn't even there. It's not even me, but it feels surreal. Like, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah, I couldn't either. I mean, it was just a blast. And I just encourage everybody, like, don't just sit there and watch the show. Like, audition for them and, you know, make some money, have some fun, do some traveling. It was a blast. I wish I could do it again.
Do you remember one of the phrases that you answered?
Yes. The one that got me the most money that I answered very quickly that everybody was kind of like, huh, how did she get that? Was crystal candlesticks.
What?
And I only had season. Yeah, it was crazy. And the other one was optician. They're like, how did you get up? Yeah, so wow. I'm telling you, the spirit of God was with me. I researched and I watched that show for years. But I tell you, every time the puzzle came up, there would be like two letters and I could already see what it was. I don't know. All I could say was that was God. I just had to wait for it to be my turn to spin the wheel. But I could see every single puzzle. It was crazy.
Is there any way that you can prepare for that game show, or you just have to have some previous experience watching? Or
I mean, you have to be good with words, but watching really just kind of gives you some tips and some hints as to know what letters to call, mm-hmm. and kind of how they do the puzzles and kind of the tricks behind phrases they choose and things like that. But I mean, I would say even if you don't know all kind of the tricks and stuff, like, just do it anyway, but be good with words. Like, don't be calling Q and Z every time, because that was one of the things in the audition, was that they wanted to see if you would call good letters. Oh. And some people were like, can I get a Q? And they're like, why are you asking for a Q?
You okay, gotta next. Go.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So
okay, I have a question about this. Because when I have watched, sometimes it feels like I don't understand why they keep buying vowels.
See, you sound like my dad. My dad was like, don't buy a vowel. Don't do it. You're wasting money. But I'm telling you, sometimes buying a vowel, it just clicks and lets you see it better. Okay. I can't explain it, but I mean, I didn't waste a whole lot of money on vowels because, like I said, I heard my dad in the back, don't buy vowels. Why are you doing that? But there was a puzzle where something just wasn't clicking until I bought that vowel and I saw it.
Yeah.
Now, other people buy vowels because they don't know the puzzle at all, so they're just buying time to see if they can figure it out. And they're like, that didn't help. Let me buy another one until it just kind of clicks with them. But, yeah, I'm the same way. Sometimes I'm like, don't do what? Why would you buy a vowel? That's easy.
Because you knew it, but maybe they didn't. Okay.
But they didn't. And when you're under the pressure of it being recorded and Pat Sajak is right there and all the lights and it's hot, like your brain just kind of goes in a different kind of what looks simple to us. Because we're at home relaxed, they can't see because they're nervous and tense and, you know.
I would crash.
The one thing is, though, my kids, I did a party after we did it over at my house and my young people came over. And, man, I did the Cabbage Patch. And my young people never
on the show.
I did the Cabbage Patch and my young people were like, Amy, you did the Cabbage Patch on live TV. I was like, but I just... Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I won $23,000.
Right, exactly. You do the Cabbage Patch too while you at it and the Macarena. But so I tried to upload it on YouTube, but they took it down.
So it was season 25, episode 2?
The second week, it was, and I was on a Wednesday. I can't remember, but you're not going to be able to find it because I tried to look for it for years. Then when I finally uploaded it from my dad's recording, they took it down because it was property of ABC or something like that.
Wow.
I was like, but I'm on it and I'm not making any money. Why can't I let other people see it? But they were like, so I, for about 3 days, everybody got to see it.
Okay. Wow. Well, that would be so, oh my gosh, I just had a vision.
You might have to show like a clip of it at the conference.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, I got to call your dad.
How about that?
We need to be in touch with your dad.
Right. No, I have a copy. So you just let me know and I will email it to everybody if they want it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'll be in touch about that for sure. Okay, Amy, let's go to the next level. If we knew you, we would know.
That I absolutely love, love, love being a biracial woman. I grew up in the 70s and I was born and raised in Maine. I know. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
There are black people in Maine. We knew all of them. there weren't a lot in Maine, but there was a military base there. So my dad is from Chicago and was stationed in the Navy.
Okay.
And then my mom, who is Irish, she grew up right down the street from the base and used to go to the base and party. And that's how they met and fell in love. But in the 70s and the 80s, you know, being biracial, there were very few of us. So we were kind of an anomaly, right? Like people used to ask my mom all the time if she was babysitting. Nobody understood it. I had, you know, long hair, light green eyes, fair skin. My brother looked like my twin. And so we came up with a lot of challenges when I moved to North Carolina. It became a whole other level because in Maine, it was just Maine, right? But then you move to the deep South and you're a biracial child and there aren't a whole lot of you. So I got bullied a lot. I got picked on a lot by girls. I mean, it was a really hard experience. But the one thing, and it plays so much now into the woman that I am and the ministry that I do. My mom always told me growing up, and I think this is why I'm so proud to be biracial and I'm very loud about it. She always told me that if people have an issue with the fact that I'm biracial, that that's their issue. That has nothing to do with me.
Right.
That everything about me is perfect and good and that you have the best of both worlds. And embrace that. Embrace that. And if other people have issues, like, tell them to deal with that. And so whenever people would have issues with that, I'd be like, sounds like you got a problem. Like it was just instilled in me, right? To be like, well, this is who you are. This is who God created you. Mm-hmm. So anybody else that has issues, that's some of their deep trauma kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't mean that I wasn't hurt by it. I didn't understand it. And so it didn't impact my identity. It just kind of impacted my worldview about how cruel people can be to someone who has no control over the way they look or their race or ethnicity. And I'm one of those women that also fight for the right to be called biracial and to self-identify the way that I want to. So when someone calls me a black woman, I'm like, no, I'm not black. I always say Obama wasn't black, Meghan Markle isn't black, Tiger Woods isn't black. Like, we're all biracial and we can self-identify in that way. People don't call me a white woman. I'm not white. I'm biracial. And I have the right to identify as that. And everybody brings it back to the whole slave thing. Well, if you have a drop of blood in you, then that means you're black, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm like, but that was created by slave owners to be able to keep those kids that were their kids in check. So just because white slave owners say I'm black, that doesn't mean that that's what I am. And so I've always fought for the right to identify as who I am and what I believe. And I think that that also bleeds over into ministry and helping young people to embrace fully who they are, love their culture. And particularly when it comes to those that are incarcerated and when they return. A lot of times in our country, well, most everybody, when somebody has served their time, we still call them felons, ex-con, ex-criminal, you know, all of these derogatory names. And I choose to call them returning citizens, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a difference. I feel like that if we commit a sin and we ask God to forgive us, he doesn't hold that sin over us. He doesn't call us by that sin. But as a country, we love to remind people of that sin that they did. And so I believe that letting those that have done their time self-identify if they want as a returning citizen is their privilege. And I fight for their right to be able to call themselves what they want to respond to how they want to be named and the fair treatment. And I think I just kind of got that in the fight of just being like, I am a proud biracial woman, even though I want to be Puerto Rican.
Yeah. Because you live in Humboldt Park.
I live in Humboldt Park. I look Puerto Rican. I go to Puerto Rico all the time. I know there's a Puerto Rican in my bloodline right now. I'm looking through my ancestry. Pero no Latina. No Latina. So I call myself a sorta Rican. I'm sorta Puerto Rican.
Oh my gosh. I love it. Okay, well, I have a follow-up question to you. Shared how you were received as a young biracial child. Yes. Do you feel you're received the same way now as a grown woman, or is it different?
I think that's a really good question. I think that's why I am really embraced in the Puerto Rican culture and the Latino culture, because even as an adult, I'm still not black enough. And I'm still not white enough. So in white circles, I'm a woman of color. But in black circles, I'm sort of a woman of color. Mm. And so I still never fully feel, I don't want to say comfortable, because I feel comfortable in my skin wherever I go. And I don't want to say accepted, because I still feel fully accepted, but not fully embraced.
Yeah.
The fullness of who I am.
And maybe like fully known.
Right. Exactly. But in the Latino culture, when I'm just around, it just doesn't even seem to be a question. It doesn't seem to be an issue, because even, like I said, the Puerto Rican culture, I mean, they're also biracial, right? Like, they're indigenous, Taino, African, and Spaniard, right? And so I fit right in. I'm just, you know, don't have the Taino, but it's just a different feeling around fully being who I am. But I'm still, even as an adult, I'm just not black enough for some people. I'm just not white enough for some people. I think that's very sad.
Yeah.
But the difference is, like, I know how to navigate those spaces. And I'm just so thankful now that we have a young generation where you just can't even really tell what anybody is anymore. So
yeah,
they don't even deal with the same issue that I've dealt with, or on the scale that I've dealt with as far as being biracial. Because now everybody's like multiracial, multicultural, and you can't really tell what anybody is. And I love that.
Yeah. Okay. Are you ready to go one level deeper?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. Give me
Let's spin the wheel. Big money.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, but you're not going to give me $25,000 for this, right? Okay.
Yeah, no way. No
All
way.
All right.
Sorry.
All right.
Okay, Amy, if we knew you, we would know.
That as long as I've been in youth ministry, and as fabulous as I am at it, there was a time where I tried to walk away from it. And a lot of times, being where I am and having been in it for 24 years and being as blessed with where God has brought me to so far, nobody would ever know that I just wanted to turn my back on it. And I tried. It wasn't that I wanted to, like I really, really tried. And so I have a kind of a painful history of being married and being abandoned by my husband. And by abandoned, meaning he took a job in New York and didn't tell me, he just kind of left me in North Carolina to kind of try to figure life out. And then one day a sheriff shows up with divorce papers and the marriage kind of ended.
Wow.
Well, he was the one that was doing the youth ministry, right? And like a lot of wives, as I had mentioned earlier, we just kind of help along, right? Like we do what we can to encourage and support and be that help for the one, and I say that in air quotes, for the one that we think is called to the work.
Okay.
And so I did that. And then when he made the decision to abandon the marriage and me, I was like, well, I guess that's the end of ministry as well. And honestly, I was relieved because ministry had really become one of the other women, right? She was the other woman that I was always competing against. And so I was just done with youth ministry. And I mean, when I say I tried to walk away, I did things like I literally bought a brand new car that only had two doors and a very small back seat, so there was no room to put young people in it. Like, I was, like, that intentional.
You're getting rid of space.
I was getting rid of space and anything that would kind of say, you know, welcome young people or ministry at all. I had to kind of get my life back together, back on track, and that's when I left North Carolina and I moved to Chicago because I had family here. And I had a lot of friends here. And so I was like, well, I'll just go back to the corporate world. I'll use my undergrad and master's degree. And God is just going to, like, we're just going life in a whole different direction. So then I joined a church. Of course, I'm still a Christian, right? Joined a church. And every time I was in church, I was just drawn to the young people. And I was like, what is this? Like, stay away. Get away from me. But I can't explain it. And so I would go to, you know, the Friday night services and I'm like, but I am not going to get involved.
I will not be praying with anyone.
I will not, a leader? No, I will sit in the back. I just am not. I mean, I was determined. And I just got sucked in. And I didn't get sucked in because of me. And honestly, I don't even want to say I got sucked in even by God leading me, but by those young people. Like, they were, as much as I was drawn to them, they were just to me, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they were just drawn to me. And we just started building these relationships, and it just became really, really beautiful to a point where they finally asked me to be a youth leader, and I was like, well, I don't have a big enough car for this.
Nice try.
You know, can I get that car budget? How about that? Of course, they said no. But I just got to a point where I was like, this is what brings me joy. And so even though I'm not called to it, now I still didn't think I was called to it, right? Yeah. I just thought I have some gifts that I can share, but in no way am I called to this. But I just kept, and they asked me to finally be a leader, and I just could not say no because these kids, I just fell in love with these young people. And But I still wasn't convinced. The moment that I was convinced and I finally accepted my calling was a turning point. It was such a turning point for me. I was blessed to be a part of the DeVos Urban Leadership Initiative, which is like this 16-month intensive for only 60 youth leaders in the country to go through at a time. And it came to Chicago. And I went through the intensive and we were at our national conference. And I was still just wrestling. Like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? This is not what I am called to do, but I love it so much. In my head, Sarah, I was still like, this is what my ex-husband was supposed to do, not me. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I just couldn't get past that. And I sat down with our city coordinator. Her name is Teresa. She was also my best friend at the time, her mom. So she knew me and she knew what I had been going through. And we're sitting there privately and I'm just crying. I'm just bawling because some stuff was triggering me. We were in Orlando and getting ready to go to an Orlando game and all this basketball stuff and just triggered me with North Carolina and some, my ex used to play basketball for Duke. And it was just triggering me. And I remember just saying like, what am I doing here? This was his thing.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, Amy, that whole scripture about how God separates the wheat from the chaff. She's like, the sad thing is that you thought you were the one being separated, but you were actually the one that was called. Mm. And you were the one that God was preparing this whole time. I'm about to start crying right now. Mm. You were the one that God was preparing this whole time.
Yeah.
And so stop fighting it and walk into everything that God has for you. Mm-hmm. This is your anointing, your calling. I mean, I'll just never forget it. And it just broke. It just broke me. And I mean, at that very moment, I was like, I am fully in.
Yeah.
And I have been fully in ever since. And that doesn't mean that I still don't have the challenges of being like, you know, why did you choose me? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's not even a question. It's like, I know he chose me. This is it for me. Young people, is it? I'm gonna be the grandma sitting on the porch in a rocking chair, still hollering like, "Boy, pick your pants up!" You know, like, "Boy, what you doing? Gang banging? Come on over here and talk to grandma." You know, like I'm it's just young people. This is my heart and my passion. But I just want to encourage, you know, women out there who are walking alongside their husband and just thinking like, my call or my role is to support his ministry. That may be true, but if you're feeling this kind of tug or you're wrestling with this thing that is like, but I love this and I'm good at this, but I need to stay in my role. Like, I would just have you really examine that and sit before God, because there's so much that God can, will, and wants to do through a vessel that just fully, fully surrenders and fully accepts where God has you. Mm-hmm. And I think we limit ourselves. I think we so much damage to the people in our communities by limiting ourselves because we don't fully pursue God in saying, what is it that you would have for me?
Well, even like you with the vision of the car thing again comes to mind. Like, you weren't making space for kids or God.
No, at all.
And that's how we often limit ourselves, is we say, well, I'm not going to make space for God. Whether it's a physical thing like that or just, you know, whatever it might be. And to really have that moment and look in the mirror, like, where am I keeping, what, you know, what space am I taking away that God could possess and use?
Well, and I think one of the things about that is that a lot of us don't want to hear what God has to say.
It's scary.
because a lot of us already know what he's going to say.
Ooh, you're speaking our language, Amy. You're speaking the Salvation Army language with this talking about calling and, oh, man.
You know, we self-sabotage ourselves so much.
Yeah.
Right? Like, as humans, we fully know our limits, right? Mm-hmm. And we know our capacity. But God doesn't call us because of our limits or capacities. Well, let me take that back. Actually, he does, because what he's saying is you are very limited.
Yeah.
You do have a limited capacity, but through you, I can show you that I have no limits and I have the ultimate capacity to get done what I need to get done through who I want to get through to the people that I need to get to.
And are you in or are you out?
Right. And you know, the truth is, I say this to people all the time. Look, I don't have time for mess, because Jesus may come back tomorrow.
Yeah.
And we got young people dying in the street. We got overcrowded prisons. We got kids and a whole island of Puerto Rico committing suicide. And we're talking about petty stuff that makes absolutely no difference. And we spend our time consumed with that kind of stuff. Instead of fully being before God, saying, like one of my favorite hip hop songs by Lecrae, right, is "Send me, I'll go." Mm-hmm. But are you, like you said, taking that time to hear what God would have? And if you're not, how come? Why are you scared?
You are speaking my language. No, I'm
what
serious.
Are you scared for?
That question though of why not me? You know, why not me? Why not me as a youth leader? Why not me as a women's ministries leader? Why not me, you know, for our context, why not me as a Salvation Army officer? Like, why not? You know, what a great challenge and question, you know?
Yeah, and again, I think that is all with how you view yourself, not how God looks at you.
Yeah.
God is like, you're absolutely the perfect person for this. Mm-hmm. And so any holdup is, you're holding yourself up. You're getting in God's way. You are in God's way, right? Mm-hmm. Of who he fully wants to be. And I tell you, what breaks my heart the most is that there's somebody out there praying for somebody like you to interrupt their world.
Yes.
There's somebody praying like, mm-hmm. God, please send me somebody to help me, to encourage me, to love me, to teach me. And your fear is getting in the way of somebody else's deliverance, healing, mm-hmm. and answered prayer. Like, do you want that to be you because you're scared? Mm-hmm. What are you scared of? Mm. Like, what are you really, really scared of? And that's the question I would challenge everybody with. I mean, I walk the streets in gang neighborhoods, right? I am not scared. But there are times when I look at myself and I'm like, ooh, like I'm scared of like my mess and my drama and my, you know, like my trauma, all of that kind of stuff. And God is like, girl, please, we got work to do.
Yeah, so much of our, like you said, the trauma and the past and those things that trigger us can be big hurdles to overcome. What would you say, knowing that you had to overcome some hurdles and you know, thankfully had that friend speak truth to you, but what do you say to those women that are held up by trauma? And that's legitimate.
No, that is very legitimate.
Right.
Because we all have it. We all do in some levels, and some people have some deeper trauma that requires some additional care, mm-hmm. And additional steps and processes. I mean, I have to tell you the truth. The way that I push through and press through that kind of stuff, right? And my stuff is never feeling good enough, right? Okay. And that's all rooted in some childhood stuff, right? Like my life story and my life thing is to believe that I am enough, that I am good mm-hmm. enough, right? And the only way I can get rid of those voices in my head is just by a very teeny community of people that I know love me, mm-hmm. that I know will tell me the truth, in love with no motive other than they see me and they want what God has for me. Mm-hmm. And so when those fears rise up or when they see me acting some kind of way, I have given them permission to call me out on it. I've given them permission to check on me. But I've also found them to be just a really safe, safe space for me to just be the hot mess that I am and not the hope dealer or the gang person or the expert on incarceration. Like, none of that matters to them. Mm-hmm. What matters to them is my heart and where I am with God and that I'm his baby girl. And so for me, it is, you know, having that safe, safe space. And then just learning what the word says about who I am.
Yeah.
Right. And developing certain things. And then going to a counselor or a psychiatrist or a psychologist or whatever you need to get the healing that will allow you to fully be who you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are resources out there to be healed. Like, they're available, the ultimate being Christ, and then everything that God provides to supplement what healing is available.
Right.
And so it's a choice. And I think to answer your question, the biggest, biggest thing that has moved me to walk fully in that and not be afraid is that I've made the choice not to. Mm. I decided. And then from there, I'm like, all right, God, now you got to provide everything available to push me through this. But first, I'm making a choice that whatever it takes, I'm going to do it and I'm going to trust you.
Yeah, I think our biggest challenge is ourselves and our unconscious disobedience.
Oh, girl. Yes, 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 yes.
Because I think when we don't even acknowledge what God has called us to, then we feel like we're not actually being disobedient. So it's this unconscious disobedience that is really holding us back and holding others back from joining the kingdom of God.
Yes, absolutely. And we all do it, and we all have it. And it is just. What snaps me out of it is just thinking about how many people would be impacted for the good through my obedience. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. And going back to what you said before, like, this life is so short. Like, is this how do I want to live this life that I've been given?
Yes. I mean, just in the last year, 2016, 2017, I buried 4 young people. I buried my number one, and then 30 days later buried another one, and then buried another one, and then buried my cousin. And I buried 11 in the last 5 years, and I just see how short and how life can just be snatched from you, friends passing away from cancer and car accidents. And I mean, even 80 years is not a long time.
No.
And so my question is, do you want to be comfortable and safe for the short time that you're here? Or do you want to impact as many lives as you can for as long as you are on this earth? And I'm telling you what, I am on a mission to impact as many people as I can. Because ultimately, though, those people that I'm impacting impact me even more.
Right.
And so if you want to be comfortable, then this ministry life isn't for you. It's just not. Mm-hmm. It's just not. But if you want to really make a difference, then you got to say yes, and then you got to press through all of it. But you don't have to do it alone. That's the key.
And in October, you will be impacting, our goal is 2018 women.
I hope so. And those 2018 Williams, those 218 women.
Or two, wait, will do the 2018 same thing. Women.
What did I say?
I think you said 200.
Oh, yeah, 2008. Well, yeah, probably because 2018 is overwhelming.
Yeah.
For me. 218 people. I can deal with that number as far as impacting me. No, I am so excited. 2018 women. I believe God can and will do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have so much fun. We're going to party hard.
Yes. Any last thoughts to inspire our women or any of those women that are still deciding, should I go? Should I not go? Anything that would inspire them?
I mean, if you want to miss out,
that's on you.
But then don't complain when you hear us and see the pictures and see lives transformed and like do what you need to do to get there. It's kind of like going to the gym sometimes, right? Like I hate working out. The hardest part is getting there, but once I'm there, I do not regret it.
Yeah.
And so, ladies, you have plenty of time to do what you need to do to get there. And I can almost guarantee you will not regret it. And I'm not just going to speak, like I'm going to get some too. So mm-hmm. I want to be there in the midst of it, rejoicing with you and hearing a word that God would have for me as well. So it's just going to be a big sisterhood thing, right?
Yeah.
It's not they and them, it's we and us. We're all going to hear from God on that weekend.
Amen. All right, Amy, thank you so much for giving me 45 minutes of your life.
Oh, my pleasure.
It was fast, it was fun, and it's just a quick glimpse of what you will experience in October. So thank you again for joining us on the Prepare Podcast, where we meet with women of faith and in ministry to help prepare and equip us in our faith pursuits and callings by hearing from your wisdom and knowledge and life and all that. So thank you.
It's my pleasure and my joy. I cannot wait to see you guys in October.
Woo! All right.
Woo!
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. To learn more about Amy, make sure you are registered for Rise and Shine today, as this episode is being broadcast on July 1st. And the early bird registration fee of $99 will increase to $129 tomorrow on July 2nd. Go to www.centralwomenarise.com to register. See you next month when I interview a Rise and Shine workshop instructor for the pre-conference and the regular conference, Reverend Bonnie Camarda. See you then.